From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. 14 people were arrested in northern British Columbia, Canada, during a political protest earlier this week against the construction of a natural gas pipeline through First Nations territory. The pipeline, being constructed by the Trans-Canada Coastal Gas Link, would cut through the Wet'suwet'en Nation and specifically the territory of the Unist'ot'en Clan. Those engaged in the action have set up a camp in the area, saying they're protecting the healing center on their land. In a press statement, they said the Unist'ot'en camp is not a blockade, a protest, or a demonstration. It is a permanent, non-violent occupation of Unist'ot'en territory established to protect our homelands from illegal industrial encroachments and to preserve a space for our community to heal from the violence of colonization. We turn to Carla Tate now. She is a clinical psychologist and the director of clinical programming at the Unist'ot'en Healing Center. She's also an Unist'ot'en House member and had been participating in the actions against the pipeline construction. Welcome to the program, Carla.
Thank you.
So for our U.S. audiences here who have not heard much about what's happening in Unist'ot'en territory, can you give us an overview and explain what the conflict is? Broadly speaking, there's a fossil fuel company, TransCanada Pipeline Construction Company, wanting to build a gas pipeline, but it happens to cut through First Nations territory, right?
So the Coastal GasLink Company had been issued provincial permits to come in and start construction on the Coastal Gas Link pipeline that will bring liquefied natural gas to, I believe, a distillery point in Kitimat. Unfortunately, there was no meaningful consultation with the hereditary chiefs that govern those territories. Within the Wet'suwet'en Nation, there are five clans. Each of the clans has 2 to 3 house groups, and the house groups have chiefs, hereditary chiefs, who are responsible for overseeing the activities on that land and ensuring that they can sustain our future generations. So the Coastal GasLink companies have reached out to consult with the wrong sources of authority, getting signed agreements from a number of First Nation band councils who actually only have jurisdiction within the limited boundaries of the reserves that make up less than 1% of the territory here in Canada. And to my knowledge, none of those reserves are along the route would have the pass line the pipeline pass through their boundaries.
And so those who do have the authority are saying that they do not want this pipeline to pass through their territory. Do they have the legal backing to say so? Didn't a court just give TransCanada the go-ahead?
So there's a complex issue in Canada right now. According to Canadian law, the Unist'ot'en, we are part of the Wet'suwet'en First Nation, and in 1997, we fought to have our rights and title recognized alongside the Gik'san Nation, our neighbors. And from that really protracted, expensive, long legal battle, I think it was about 10 years for the decision to be reached, there were two significant outcomes. One was that our hereditary chiefs were able to admit as evidence oral testimony regarding our use and governance over the land for millennia before Canada was formed. So oral testimony was accepted for the first time as evidence. The other really substantial outcome is that it noted that Aboriginal rights and title, our ownership of the land, had never been surrendered at any point. So it spurred decades of treaty negotiations between the government and First Nations people. The Wet'suwet'en First Nation has not signed a treaty with the BC government to date. So therefore, you know, what we're left with was this landmark decision, noting that we've never ceded our rights over our territory. But according to the Canadian legal system, we have a responsibility to prove then that we have title over the lands. So they're willing to acknowledge that we've never given up our rights over our territory, but we have to jump through the hoops and the legal expense against a structure with much more power and resources to prove to them that we own the lands we've lived on and used for millennia.
So we do. Explain what has been happening on the ground now, and we're hearing about what's happening because 14 people were just arrested by the RMCP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and so now that's making news. What exactly has been happening on the ground?
Well, I know that there was a lot of fear and concern. We haven't had good historic relations with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police here in Canada as Indigenous people. Oftentimes, they are the legal use of force to oppress our communities. You know, they were complicit and involved with removing children during the residential school era, legally under sanction of Canada. So just because something is legally acceptable or, you know, sanctioned doesn't mean that it's right. So our people, the Gidimdan clan, which are our neighboring clan with the territory next to the Unistautins, you know, were exercising their right to occupy and use their territories. And they were pressing our government to be accountable to our I guess, Canada's own commitments to the United Nations rights of Indigenous people. You know, Canada had passed in the House of Commons an Indigenous rights bill aimed at ensuring that Canada's laws align with UNDRIP. And, you know, it means that they cannot forcefully access our lands and deny us access for traditional uses of our territories, that there needs to be meaningful consultation and consent for that use. So it's that hasn't been achieved here. So I think there was a great deal of fear about the show of force, you know, the number of units. There was 23 units deployed to go in and enforce the injunction, and against a small group of unarmed, you know, Gidimdan members and, you know, guests that were helping to maintain their right to govern that territory. You know, CGL and the province are trespassing here.
So what is the status currently now? Is TransCanada basically claiming, as are the companies involved claiming that they have the legal rights? Is the Canadian federal government also essentially acknowledging that that they're going to allow this to continue? We know that under Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who has paid lip service to First Nations rights and to doing something about climate change, has also then, on the other hand, promoted fossil fuels and betrayed, in many instances, First Nations.
I don't know that I can sum it up any better than you just have. I think it does call into question how earnestly Canada is, I guess, trying to uphold Aboriginal rights and has concern about, you know, climate and the environment, when their actions are quite the opposite. To my knowledge, you know, his comments that we need to still be lawful and, you know, I guess, honor that injunction, that's based on fallacies, right? So the companies submitted that they had permission and that they had engaged in meaningful consultation and received consent for this project. They went and sought that consent from the wrong sources of authority, from communities that were many miles removed from where the pipeline is proposed to pass through. So there was no meaningful consultation and no consent in this case, and so that injunction was wrongly awarded.
So do you, can you also give us a sense of how Canadians have been expressing solidarity, if any? I understand there have been protests in front of government buildings. There have been hundreds of people that have showed up with signs and said that they want to express solidarity with the Unistotum territories, and I mean with the nation.
I was really heartened and pleased to see the really amazing shows of support across the country, across the world yesterday. You know, I think it reflects that people are willing to understand the negative history that Canada's had with First Nations people, that many countries have had with Indigenous people. And there is an interest in turning the tide in a good way, to actually achieving reconciliation, you know, for Canada to act in ways that reconciles with that brutal history with our people. So I would say to all of the supporters and advocates, you know, we are noticing that you're standing in alliance with us and helping us have a voice when we're facing extreme acts of violence by the state and oppression. You know, what's remaining of our traditional territories is very limited. It's 10%. It's barely enough for us to maintain our healing center and to draw on the lands to revitalize our culture and recover from the history of colonization. And that's the vision for our Unistaten territory. It's not to protest, it's to heal.
What would the impact of a pipeline be in the territory?
I think it would be devastating. I know people argue that LNG is one of the safest types of projects, like that are, natural gas based, or gas based, or fossil fuel based. You know, we have a very small territory left, as I mentioned. One of the key things that promotes the healing and the wellness out there is the fact that we have pristine, potable drinking water. Many of our ceremonies are water-based. That water feeds the residents there and the healing center clients. It also is a spawning estuary for two major river systems here in northern Canada. And we know salmon are under great threat from all of the different overfishing and environmental pollutants and projects out there. Presently, we have very limited fresh water left in the world. And LNG, the process of fracking, is very taxing on that limited fresh water. It also would impact our traditional medicine gathering grounds, where many of our fresh berries grow. You know, we have three different kinds of berries that are edible that grow on Wet'suwet'en territory, and we don't often see them all together.
Wow.
Have a patch along that route where we harvest those berries. It's also along the path of trap lines that we've maintained for hundreds of years. Our current Netabis had been trapping there himself since he was a teenager. We have a pit house along that route. We have a permaculture garden. So we use all of our territory, what's
Sounds
left of
incredible.
It. Yeah, I mean, we use it all to support the work at the Healing Center and the work that individuals do, reconnecting to culture. Many who haven't had that opportunity due to, you know, the 60 scoop or experiences with residential school themselves. So that's the vision for that space, is to run full-time programming that would support our healing and our wellness as Indigenous people.
You mentioned that there's such a small amount of territory left. Surely TransCanada, if they and the local authorities could find a way around the territory, couldn't they?
You would think. I know that when we had first heard of this project, we did push back and mentioned that there was nowhere within Unistaten territory we could see this project be feasible to pass through, just because, you know, it's all of what's left. It's needed for our own self-determined purposes. My understanding is that, you know, the company's been very vocal about alternate routes being unfeasible due to expense that it would cost the project. So I don't know if that's partly why they haven't attempted to meaningfully engage with us. I know there have been multiple occasions where they tried to force their way in with provincial permits and argued that we weren't allowing them access, when in fact we redirected them to our hereditary chief and encouraged them to engage in meaningful consultation so we could be heard. And that never occurred. So
it sounds, Carla, like the entire project is concerning to your community, that the destructive means by which liquid natural gas is extracted through fracking, the impact that burning this has on the atmosphere, in addition to, of course, the all-important impact the actual pipeline has in the short term, short and long term, in the territory. Do you feel that we are past time to stop new projects that continue to promote this very destructive energy use?
Personally, I believe so. I know part of my aunt's really strong stance, and she's had the support of our hereditary chief. So our Anak Neoten, our Wet'suwet'en traditional law that governs our people, does say all conduct on those territories needs to be approved and sanctioned by our hereditary chief. So she has that approval. CGL does not. But she's done a lot of research over the last 8 years that she's occupied and lived on our territory since the construction of the beautiful, I'd say volunteer-funded and built structures that are out there to support this healing work, many by advocates and allies that are non-Indigenous. So, you know, that's true reconciliation in action. Yeah, it's partly why she's taken such a strong stance, why we've taken that as a family, as a house group, and why some of our neighbors and the other hereditary chiefs have stood up in solidarity too. I think is that we recognize part of our responsibility is to those future generations, and with the destruction of the natural world, that's just been accelerating over time. You know, we do need to take a firm stance and take that responsibility seriously. There are many other economic projects that we could be exploring that we're not. And our communities that are really under duress due to limited resources and overwhelming mental health and other social ills need resources to give them hope for a future. And the only options that are presented to them shouldn't be ones that are as destructive to our future as these oil or net fossil fuel projects.
Now, what has happened to the 14 people that were arrested earlier this week? What do they face? And do you fear that there will be greater police repression if the attempts at blockading construction continue?
I think we are fearful. We know that RCMP have not acted in the interest of protecting our Indigenous communities to the same degree that they've protected other Canadian populations. Right now, we have the missing murdered Indigenous women issue in Canada, and Highway 16 is one of the routes along which many women and even men have gone missing without a trace. And we've, in the last year, had two instances of Indigenous women missing and one confirmed murdered here in this very area near Smithers, which is only a couple hours from our Unistaten territory. So, you know, the police's action to enforce the injunction has been very, very concerning, you know, creating an exclusion area where our own hereditary chiefs can't access their territory, keeping out media and the public, supposedly for safety, but it also removes any chance for accountability in observing that they're engaging in peaceful enforcement of that injunction. So the exclusion area was set up several kilometers away from the actual first Gidim Dan checkpoint. So it's fortunate that there were already media on site to catch what happened. That exclusion zone would limit any other media from covering how they interact with our members at our Unistaten boundaries. So it's very concerning, and I'm praying for the safety of my mother and my aunt and all the amazing supporters and the people that are there for healing right now.
Finally, Carla, do you see this struggle connected to other struggles by First Nations in the face of fossil fuel industry expansion in Canada, as well as those Indigenous-led struggles here in the United States that have many of these similar themes of territorial sovereignty versus the expansion of fossil fuel?
Absolutely. I think we all collectively are standing up. We're fulfilling our own responsibilities, much of the values that I think we share that are a universal thread throughout Indigenous communities is having a proper, respectful relationship with the land that makes us who we are. And that involves protecting it. You know, it's interesting. I think people have been sometimes in our community, and this is probably the reason for the dissent that we're seeing, and for some being supportive of these projects for some economic opportunity versus those who are staunchly defending their territory from this kind of destruction, is the fact that, you know, Unistaten, all of our ancestors and elders lived on and used that land. They knew it intimately. They knew their responsibilities intimately. And during that residential school era, neither of my grandparents had been sent away. They actually escaped to the territory and stayed there to avoid the police from removing their children to forcibly bring them to these assimilation schools. So I think it allowed our family and our leaders a chance to really know who they are and know that connection and know that it's our responsibility to stand up and protect the territories that protected us,
right,
and provide for us.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Carla. Good luck to you. We'll keep our eye on this story for sure.
Thank you.
Carla Tate has been my guest. She is a clinical psychologist and the director of clinical programming at the Unistaten Healing Center. She's also a an Unistaten House member. She had been participating in the actions against the pipeline construction. And you can find out more about all of the work that she has been doing, as well as about the Healing Center online and the camp, at unistoten.camp. That's UNISTOTEN.camp. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.